We all think about what we eat. We plan our meals or count carbs or do any number of things when it comes to what we consume. But do you ever think about the flavor of what you consume? Sure you do. What we eat or drink either tastes good or it doesn't. In fact, taste is the number one consideration in what we consume. Yet there is more to it than just like or dislike, and there's even a whole industry dedicated to it. Flavor is memory. Flavor is feeling. Flavor is science. Flavor is art. Flavor is McCormick Flavor Solutions. I'm Landy Donovan, and welcome to our Flavor University podcast, where we will explore the science, artistry, and industry behind flavor. Hello, everybody. My name is Randy Donovan, and I am the new host for Flavor University's podcast. I am so happy and so excited to be here with you. I hope that during our time together, I can invite you into the world of flavor and what we do here at McCormick Flavor Solutions. We will have an amazing array of people who work in this industry and work in our world of flavor that we create together. I am an associate product manager in the beverage division. I have a background in communications and I am a professionally trained chef. I graduated from the Culinary Institute of America in New York. I am so lucky that I'm able to bring all of the things that I love together, and I feel so lucky to be able to share that with you. Today, we are talking about product reformulation. We are going to look at the regulatory landscape and technical advice, and I'm very excited to introduce our two guests. Annalika, would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hello, my name is Annalika Vanoy, and I am now 8 years with McCormick Flavor Solutions. I'm heading up the beverage team from a technical perspective, and together we serve and support beverage customers, beverage producers with flavors, technical needs, and anything they ask us for where we can help them out. Since I graduated at university, I've been a product developer myself, worked in different end uses, dairy, beverages, and also in flavor houses. And I did this in different countries and organizations. And I have to say, over the 20 years I've been working in and around the lab, I still enjoy reformulating, playing with recipes, and supporting any great tasting beverages we can help with.
Hi, everybody. I'm Alex Brewer. I'm the Scientific and Regulatory Affairs Director for the Americas for McCormick. So what that means is the team and I, we cover anything McCormick is up to in all the Americas. I've been here at the company for a little over 8 years, but I have over 15 years in the food and flavor industry doing quality and regulatory affairs.
Well, like I said, I'm so happy to have you both here. And I hope that we can just provide some insight and shed some light on what's ahead of us. Everybody, I think, is aware that right now we are facing an unprecedented amount of state-level legislation, and it's affecting the way products are put together, ingredients such as texturizers, preservatives, dyes, and things like that. Alex, can you share a little bit about what you're seeing?
Yeah, so in my over 15 years of being in the regulatory space, I've never seen as much change as happening right now. So we have a confluence of state and federal action happening. So at the federal level, right, we saw a few weeks ago the health secretary and the FDA commissioner come out saying they want all the FD&C dyes to be removed from food. We're seeing a post-market chemical evaluation program that the FDA is kicking off and launching, and they just last week came out and targeted a few extra ingredients, BHA, BHT, and azodicarbonamide, or ADA specifically. So that's big and bold for the FDA, usually moves pretty slow. And then at the state level, it's kind of a little wild west. We have over 75 bills in over 30 some odd states that would either ban, restrict, require labeling for a wide variety of ingredients. So it's a lot to keep up with and a lot to keep track of. And so it's just a landscape like we've never seen before.
Wow, just listening to that makes me a little overwhelmed. I can't imagine the pace that you're seeing right now.
Yeah. So it's a fast pace. Like I said, it's nothing that like we've ever dealt with before, but it's just a larger scale than what we're used to, right? We're used to these things happening especially when we're dealing with, you know, international locations or even within the domestically here. It's a lot more, it's a lot more to keep track of, but it's certainly not, you know, if you've got a strong regulatory team and a strong program, it's nothing you can't really handle.
Annalika, can you share on your end how that sort of trickles down to the next step of the process and the things that you deal with?
Yeah, I might be very neutral about it. As product developer, you're used to follow briefs from marketing people, from regulatory needs. So I see this as an ongoing task to keep working as a product developer. And yes, there is a lot of uncertainty about raw materials. It is indeed increasing here in the US, but restaurant relations always has been a large portion of any product developer's activity, especially on cost value optimization is a key role of any R&D team I've been part of. And now it's a regulatory that's driving it, but it's an ongoing puzzle to stay compliant with the evolving market needs. And as product developer, we follow the needs and we will try to make the puzzle work. In other countries, they have tried reformulations in different ways. They succeeded. And I'm confident we will make it work one way or the other. It's stressful and the timelines will be short, but it's an ongoing ask and it will not go away. And it always has been there for product development. We will see. Just tell us the priorities, the timelines and everything that comes with it.
That's great to hear. And I love, as you're talking, the thing that really stuck out to me is you said, you know, you feel laid back about it. I take it this is the work that you do every day as on the technical side and in reformulation. Can you tell us a little bit about
how you reformulate every day? You play with raw materials every day. And ideally, you want to create new products, new flavors, new tastes. That's the biggest joy of launching something new. But playing with ratios, playing with ingredients, replacing ingredients because there is a hurricane and some juices are not available. Or in this case, there is a bill and some ingredients are banned or will be banned. It's part of the brief. And there are a lot of solutions and tools we can try. And hopefully my team, other teams, R&D teams can just find the puzzle work.
And I think that's also really interesting. You know, that's not something I think a lot of us think about. You mentioned hurricanes. You know, we're always facing in this industry these kinds of obstacles. And I think for our listeners, it's comforting to know that we have people like you and people like Alex that are there for us, taking care of these things, you know, keeping an eye on it for us. Alex, can you tell us a little bit about how you stay on top of this? I don't even remember the number of bills you mentioned. How on earth you have a million sticky notes or what's going on?
We've certainly evolved past the sticky note phase, for sure. So what we do, and I think we as a company are a little bit of a unique position because we're flavor companies, so we're hooked into those types of industries. And we're also consumer companies, so we're hooked into that industry. So we have the opportunity to receive a lot of information. A lot of it comes through our trade associations or other services that we signed up for. But when you're getting all this information from the spice industry, the flavor industry, the consumer industry, et cetera, a lot of it's overlapping and duplicating. You have to have a good way and a good program to filter it because there could be a lot of noise. There's a lot of things that aren't relevant for you or for your customers. So we have got a decent program in place and a lot of people monitoring things globally and filtering them and coming together and talking about the impact to us and or to our customers. So that's in general how we keep on top of it. We take the external resources, coalesce a cross-functional team who can understand the impact best, filter it down, and then get narrow on the impact. First, we do like a high-level impact, like yes, no, maybe, and then we kind of narrow it down to what is the exact impact and then the timeline so we can then communicate it out to the business and we can all be ready and hopefully be ahead of the game so that when the requests come in from our customers about reformulation, that Annalika and her team and all the other teams already know that this is coming and are already working proactively on possible solutions.
That's really interesting. And I noticed kind of an overlap as you're both talking. You're talking about monitoring and filtering and communication from the customers coming in. And then Annalika, previously you had just mentioned when briefs come in with information for your team. I guess, can you tell us a little bit about what you are looking to hear from customers to help guide them best? And, you know, what you do, I hear is a lot of teamwork and collaboration So how do you take all of that information and really make it come to light for people?
It's asking the right questions. What is the pain point? Where can we help with? In our case, it's on flavor support. Can we help with flavors? But overall, as technical person, it's product development. What do we need to replace and what timeline? It's coming back on what Alex said, I think important to mention is, besides the trade association and your regulatory support to stay up to date with reformulations, see also your ingredient suppliers as a core source of information. Call them up. Many suppliers are eager to talk technical to technical. That's the best way and the most efficient way to solve product formulation challenges together. Suppliers also can support with technical advice, even marketing advice, sensory advice, if you need to check something about the customer, consumer end, they can advise what alternatives could look like. And a different way to say it, if you're a product developer on a beverage or a product, you are an expert on that product and that processing of that product and scaling it up, but you might not be an expert on the raw material. You're more a generalist. And your supplier is touching that ingredient every day over and over. So they can easily advise you on dosages, interactions that happen, stability, the impact on taste when you're reformulating. So really see suppliers as an additional source to stay up to date, but also to help you with a toolbox or just getting ahead of what can we do and use them as a good source.
And you're so good about this, Annalieke, even down to marketing. I guess that's something we could share about what we do. You'll set up meetings where we can just speak with our suppliers and hear how they're using their products and how it can apply to our products. That's so helpful. It really brings things to life. And I can say as a marketer, that gives me information. So I'm sure for all of our listeners, customers, that really gives a great connection. So much of this is, you know, relationship based and seeing what we can do together. Alex, I guess, is there anything I'm gathering? There must be associations and things like that. What are your resources that you rely on and lean on for that kind of thing?
Yeah, so we're involved in a bunch of different associations depending on the products. The main ones that we're involved with would be, you know, the American Spice Trade Association. Obviously, if you think of McCormick, you think of spices, which is ASTA, and then the Flavor and Extract Manufacturers Association, FEMA. And the Consumer Brands Association, or CBA, that's our main consumer trade group. And we have replicas of those types of associations in most of the countries that we work in. So it's not just US, we're in those types of associations all over the globe. And they're great about really feeding the information, but I agree with Annalieke that your suppliers can also help you. Like I said, spices, flavors, consumer products, we're deep experts, but we might not be super deep experts on hydrocolloids, for instance, or something along those lines from a regulatory perspective, right? And our suppliers can provide us a little bit more technical data on what's going on or what advocacy that they're working on. What do they see as the roadblocks? What do they see as the solution, et cetera?
As I'm listening, I'm thinking of, you know, there's so much collaboration in this and so much communication. And ultimately, we're all working together to create something fantastic. We have our products, suppliers have their products, and we're all coming together to create someone's vision. Or, you know, in this case with Annalieke, we're talking about beverage. As you work with customers, kind of how do you establish that goal with them and get there?
I think as a supplier, you're a follower. So the customer has an objective. We can support them in asking more questions about what is the timeline? Is there a cost impact? Is there a nutrient target? Anything about taste and texture? So I think from a flavor perspective, it's very important to know if you're reformulating, does the new product or the reformulated product has to taste exactly the same as the old product? Or is there some wiggle room? Surprisingly, I've seen examples where a difference is even a reason to believe for consumers that there was a change. So if the brief is we go from artificial to natural and there's a lot of communication about that, maybe some sediment or some color change is accepted by the consumer because that's the reason natural might be a little bit different in color or less bright. But again, as technical person, you follow the brief, marketing and sensory and all the inputs you get in a brief is leading. It's not that we predict or say this has to be. It's more a following role and playing that puzzle with the cross-functional team. And with the cross-functional team, that's another part important in reformulations. Regular meetings about the feasibility, the scenarios, what can we do on label, what can we do on calories, what can we do on the brief, and what is maybe unrealistic or needs a different timeline. So stay connected on the options and then define as a team what is necessary for this customer, for this product, to bring that to life as a reformulation.
As reformulation is going on and the regulations are popping up, Alex, do you, how does that sort of play into what you do? Say somebody, say there's a beverage that was kosher and now we're changing certain ingredients, or say it was organic and we're switching out something. How do you tap into that?
Yes. So what we like to be is we like to serve as advisors to the product developers. So as they're going on their journey, whatever the brief is, we like to be alongside to be able to answer questions, be that kind of technical consultant on how these changes will change the regulation. I will say, years I've been here, Annalika asks the best questions for regulatory purposes, I think, of any developer I've ever worked with before. And we will get into deep philosophical discussions about labeling or what these changes mean. And that's the type of stuff that we love. We love talking about this stuff. We love getting into the detail, figuring out what the implications are for us and for our customers. And on the regulatory side, we'd really appreciate it when developers ask the right questions, because we know they're thinking in the right way about the products that they're working on.
And that's the fun part, I think. It's about the detail. And I see a product reformulation or product design as a puzzle. And Alex and his team regulatory is a part of the puzzle. And you want to have the details right, because otherwise, in the end, you might have surprises. Or regulatory is pretty straightforward. There is often no gray. And as a product developer, you can play a little bit in gray, let's say a little bit more or less of an ingredient. Sometimes doesn't matter so much. But for Alex and for regulatory, there might be a maximum limit. So it's bouncing back ideas and options and really challenging, can we do this? Because often the solutions are in the margin and in the challenging question to get to a consensus, what is realistic and how can we bring that formulation to life. The regulatory also helps with defining, I would say, a toolbox. So if you have a puzzle, you have so many pieces, defining a large toolbox, how you can solve the puzzle, the reformulation is important. So that might mean going to different suppliers for different ingredients and also thinking creatively, how can we solve it? So if the ask is lower calories in a certain product, most likely you will miss mouthfeel. That could be mouthfeel from sweetness, from fat, from in beverage, often alcohol brings mouthfeel. So what can you do to fill the gap of mouthfeel with the toolbox? So ingredients that could help could be alternative sweeteners. It could be stabilizers to help with mouthfeel. Maybe some juice could help. And definitely flavor modulation could help with mouthfeel. But flavors can also help it mimic alcohol notes, mimic sweetness. So it's the more you think about what could I use to play around and try in the lab is really helping to get to that endpoint of how could a new formulation look like.
When people kind of ask me what we do here at McCormick Flavor Solutions, I say it, you know, kind of with a wink, but I say we make magic. You just mentioned taking something out and adding something else in and mouthfeel and alternatives. And I so appreciate that, kind of showing what you create. You are, you know, taking one thing and say we have to take out an ingredient and make it another. Ultimately, with everything going on right now, how does price kind of play into this? What do you recommend for our developers as they're looking at their products? I know a lot of times reformulation can be price motivated. You know, that's a huge factor.
Yeah, I would say these days it's regulatory, but often it's price driven. Value optimization is always a part of anything a product developer does. The key to think about is, I would say, cost and use. For example, with flavors, overall, if you're able to concentrate a flavor, that might drive your cost reduction. Not all flavors can be concentrated, but if you're able to concentrate, that really helps a cost reduction. But at the flip side, your flavor cost will go up. So the price per pound or price per kilo will definitely go up. So for some people, it looks more expensive, but I would say highlight the cost in your product. So what's the cost contribution of a certain ingredient in your product and compare that to the different tools you have. So if you have two options that work well in your reformulation, calculate the price contribution in the product, cost in use, and then make a decision what is best for taste, what is best for other parameters, and definitely what is best for cost.
Alex, as you hear that, and how does that sort of bounce back to you? Do people ever have sort of unrealistic expectations, or through regulatory, do you have to be the bad guy and say, no, we can't do that? Or how do you navigate that?
Yeah, so we're often painted as the bad guy. We here like to try to offer alternatives, right? So not everything can happen, but we try the no but approach. So like, no, you can't do this, but maybe you can do that, to try to partner and find creative solutions. But some things are impossible. The one that we always kind of joke about a little bit in regulatory is globally compliant, right? If somebody says they want something globally compliant, it's just, there are too many different variables going on. You're going to end up with nothing left in your toolbox to, when you label, you know, when you have all those circles in the Venn diagram, that centerpiece is not going to be anything. The number of parameters you put in your brief just starts shrinking the tools that the product developer has, or the tools that we can work with them to say like, no, you can't use that. Yes, you can. But if you want, you know, kosher, organic, whole food compliant, halal, non-GMO project, has to be also be able to be sold in Brazil and China. You know, you just start shrinking the toolbox of ingredients. So it's really key to, I think, for anyone manufacturing the food, because some of these are nice to haves. It's key to know what's driving the kind of the core and the essence of your product from a regulatory perspective. Maybe having an organic product is how you want to position in the market. And that's really important. And that's awesome. And you should stick with that. But maybe you don't need all these other things. Or maybe you want to launch eventually in 4 other countries. But right now, you're just doing it in 2. And focusing on what's really necessary can help expand the palette of ingredients available for your product and for your supplier, whatever they're providing to you, and give you what you really want. A lot of the nice to haves can be a little distracting sometimes.
And I would say it's not only Alex and regulatory to be the bad guy, but it's finding that balancing act of what is realistic for the brief, what is important, and R&D is up for the challenge. If it looks realistic and difficult, we definitely like that, crack the code of that formula. It's good to have that conversation with, in our case, our customers, but have it with your marketing. It's also education and aligning on understanding each other's, because cross-functional team members come from different angles and we have to find what is important for all of us and definitely for our consumer and how we can bring it to the market.
That's such a, I'm picturing you in the lab and this brief and kind of the laughs. And I love that because I think, you know, honestly, in sort of these times of stress and change, I think we do need sort of a little sense of humor to get through. You know, obviously what we're doing is incredibly important in terms of regulation and safety and health for people. But as you say that, it really brings to light that you two do this every day. Can you share, we said these are unprecedented times, but can you speak, either of you or both of you, can you speak a little bit about that? This is what you do every day. You know, this is not the first time you've seen so many of these things pop up.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a larger volume than we're used to dealing with, but this is why we set up the programs that we do. This is why you have a regulatory team, is to be able to do this. If you have a, you know, robust, we call horizon scanning program, where you're looking out and scan and figuring out what's going on and you're gathering the information and filtering it. If you have, you know, what your products are and the impact, you know, you can do this. It's a little bit of a, right now, just a volume issue. So, but if you have the program in place, you can handle the volume. You just need to kind of ramp up and get more people involved and just be able to run the process that you have. And you just have to move a little bit quicker than you normally would. Because right, maybe we would have 1 or 2 major things going on at a time, and now there's closer to 10 or 12. So you just have to move with a little bit more pace than maybe you're accustomed to keep up with how fast things are changing. But if you've got that strong foundation, it's certainly doable. As we're our programs are being tested right now, and so far we're doing all right.
That's great. And, you know, meeting a challenge, reaching those goals is always a good thing. And I am very often kind of a positive person, but listening to you too makes all of this makes the world right now seem a lot less scary. So I hope that everyone listening can get that takeaway as well. So when a brief comes in or a project comes in and it feels mission impossible, how do you advise customers to get where they need to be?
I would say it starts with a conversation, understanding their perspective and where this brief came from, asking the questions, what is possible, and suggesting, hey, we can do this or we can do that. Have you thought about this? And digging deeper in the priorities of the customers and where we can help, and maybe where there is a regulatory or a technical challenge we might not be able to crack, and stay realistic, but also think in solutions. And in the end, it's the customer or the team who wants to launch and reformulate a product to make those decisions. And those are not easy. I would say with all the changes, it might be hard to prioritize, but it's making choices and how to stay in the market with your products. And is it a compromise in color? Is it a compromise in taste? Hopefully not. But yeah, it's finding that fine line of what is feasible, where can we try to support and have that conversation. And then all is linked to timeline. I think that's the hardest part. Reformulating is takes time. What I've seen and what's very helpful, if you define the toolbox of options you can play with, create experimental design, really to tack off a lot of variables at the same time in a logic way, instead of just ping-ponging, going up with the dose, trying something, so random changes that take more time and your learnings might be not as logic, or you might not understand exactly what's happening in your product. So if you have a strong experimental design to validate the amount of parameters you can crack in a certain time, that might really help to move forward. And another important thing in the timeline is it's not so much the reformulation itself, it's the supply chain that comes after. Can we source all those ingredients, and even more on the technical lens, stability. So a product comes with a shelf life. If you change something in the formula, that might have an impact. A new ingredient might look very straightforward, but as product developer, you don't know the impact on color, texture, taste. Sometimes weird things happen over time. So you can have off notes, browning, decoloring, changing structures can appear over time. And sometimes you can see that in days, sometimes that takes months. So I would definitely recommend use similar validation and stability testing as for a new launch, and do this in the final packaging. Any packaging type which is not the final packaging might cause a different reaction. So packaging size, material, it all has an impact on the stability results. And you need time for stability. Most producers do a combination of accelerated stability testing versus real shelf life testing. And you have to see what's feasible in your timing. Worst case, I've seen producers launching with a shorter shelf life and extend the shelf life over time, but definitely do a stability testing protocol for any reformulation, because you don't want to have something fail in the market and look weird for your consumer. Being compliant is one thing, but being delicious and stable in the market is definitely what's in my mind.
The stability is such an interesting issue. I think as a consumer, even myself in this business, sometimes I will buy something and it looks one way, and the next time I go to buy it again, it's a little bit different. Not in terms of what we're talking about here with reformulation and regulation, but I think that stability is something not behind the scenes like you that we take sort of for granted. So that's very interesting.
Making a cocktail in a glass, or a cocktail, we say, in a can. So an RTD cocktail is, I call it an art. There's a lot of technical knowledge playing a role. And of course, taste plays a role. But yeah, making a cocktail in a glass is already difficult for a good mixologist or a bartender, but making that same cocktail stable in a can, yeah, again, sometimes it's mission impossible, sometimes it's playing with all the toolbox items you have. But that's what we do every day, and that's what we like as well.
I feel so safe and secure in your hands, and especially your minds. You are both just, it just kind of blows me away what you're able to do. We chatted today and I listened to both of you. I feel so confident in your abilities and the work that you do every day. And I don't say that in an insincere, over the top way. I truly mean that. Alex, can you share with us any final advice for our listeners that you have regarding what we're going through?
Yeah. So it might seem overwhelming, like, you know, when I'm saying 75 bills in 30 states and the MAHA Commission and there's all this action at FDA. But the key thing is to not panic, is to just stay calm, trust in the information you have, trust in your programs, trust in your suppliers, reach out for advice, talk to people, talk to colleagues, talk to, you know, others in the industry to get a handle on things. You know, like I said before, there's a lot happening, but it's just, we've got the programs in place and the processes are working and we're just going to keep funneling the information and assessing the impact and moving on. It's a wave right now. But this is why you have regulatory teams. This is why you have programs in place. This is why you have great R&D teams that are able to be creative and flexible and reformulate. And it's a testament to the programs that you've built in times like this, that where they get a little bit more tested.
That I think gives all of us a sense of security and confidence and just kind of calm in the storm. You mentioned a wave and that was kind of the first thing that came to my mind. We have a safe place, a calm in the storm. And Annalika, what can you share for us for your best advice and final tips for us?
For sure, I follow the don't panic. Stay calm and do this together with your cross-functional teams and your suppliers, or the whole industry is at the same place. We all have to figure this out. And then from a technical lens, I would say if you get to a reformulation, use an unbiased sensory protocol. Make sure your tastings are organized. You follow good sensory habits and make decisions that make sense for your customer needs. A golden tongue or quick decisions on how something tastes or how something behaves doesn't help. So stay calm and do the due diligence, what you would do normally. Just do it a little bit faster.
That's great to hear. A little side note, you said a golden tongue. Can you explain to our listeners what that is? That's a phrase we use a lot, and I don't know if everybody sort of knows what that means.
That's a good question. If you taste products or evaluate products, this could be even from a color or texture perspective, you always come in as a consumer yourself. And the trick in R&D or in food companies is to taste against a brief. So very unbiased. Leave behind your background, your education, your cultural products you tasted when you were little. It's really to taste as your consumers. And there are protocols from a sensory perspective that can help with it. Do it with, let's say, 200 consumers, or do it with a panel that is and have your products blind. Sometimes there are customers and there are labs where there's one person with a very strong opinion, and we call that a golden tongue. That tongue tastes as having an opinion, and that's okay. But if you want to make logic decisions for your product, it's good to avoid or overcome those strong opinions about taste, because they are not representing your consumer. You have to taste as your consumer and do that in a statistically correct way.
That's great information. And I think that also gives a peek. I don't know if everybody knows how much tasting we do as we taste market products and our own products and, you know, even the people, consumers that we invite in to taste and give us, you know, feedback and evaluation on what we're doing.
Say my team tastes 5, 6, 7 times a day with always a group to phase out sensitivities. Some people are better in bitter than other people. So we really want to have 6 to 10 people tasting an item to make a good recommendation. And then when we are closer to the finish line with a customer, we would recommend a sensory protocol, a consumer test, something to validate the lab's conclusions or the lab's recommendations and translate that to consumers and the targets, because millennials might taste different than Gen Zs, and people in Texas might taste different than East West Coast. So you want to understand where you launch, what is your product, and what are you after, and validate it against that target consumer group.
That's so interesting. And the amount of detail, that's a huge takeaway I'm hearing from both of you. You are both so detail oriented and, you know, so many checks and balances and, you know, cross-referencing and information tasting. That is so interesting to me. And so kind of as a nod to that, and one of our previous podcast hosts, Corey, he always ended the podcast by asking just some sort of off the cuff and fun questions. And I would love to honor him and his great work in that way. So you both, as I said, mentioned a lot of detail and a couple of words as you were talking. I heard you say puzzle, toolbox, creative, solve. Tell me, what kind of kids were you? Were you puzzle kids, Lego kids? Were you out in the, you know, backyard building a fort? Where does your problem solving, how did it sort of manifest to where you are today?
Actually, the puzzle part, I still might enjoy a puzzle once in a while. But I liked the STEM courses like maths just as a puzzle. Actually, I don't like maths, but seeing it as a puzzle, I got pretty good at them, or at least succeeded in my exams. But being creative, always glue and paper art, making things that could be in the kitchen, that could be just doing arts and paintings. So the creativity definitely was available when I was younger and still enjoy it.
How about you, Alec?
As a kid, so I was outside a lot, just running around in the neighborhood, riding a bike, playing sports, things like that. But just like Annalika said, and I didn't even realize this when we were talking. Yeah, I enjoy a puzzle. That's the fun stuff, right? We get something odd or weird that comes in the door, and we get to try to solve it. And that's really where the fun is, putting your heads together with other people and trying to figure out, all right, how can we untie this knot that we've been presented with? It's just, yeah, I get a lot of joy out of that type of thing.
That's great. I kind of love hearing about those sides of both of you. Another thing you both mentioned was filtering all this information. And as we're talking to people and running into, you know, to get to our goals, what's kind of your favorite way to filter out the world and unwind? I know we talked about puzzles and fun things like that, but what else do you guys turn to? Is it, you know, phone off or books? Annalika?
I would go on a long hike, ideally in a beautiful destination, and just no phone, nothing, because the best ideas come to me when you're thinking about other stuff in the middle of the night or on a hike, I would say. I like the outdoors. That's definitely a place to get new creativity, new energy, to be ready for the next challenge at work.
And for me, it's kind of similar, but I'm on a bike while I'm doing it. I just want to get on my bike and just kind of ride until I can't anymore.
Yeah, maybe that's my Dutch background. I'm often on a bike, but I see that as transport, not as reduction. I get to A to B, and then I want to do something at destination.
That's great. I love that you're both out there on this path. And again, I see so much, you know, goal orientation and you know, enjoying the process of getting there, whether it's the challenge of your hike or the challenge of your bike ride. And that, I can tell you, I will be on the couch probably scrolling on my phone. So I admire that both so much in both of you. So as we close out, I just want to thank both of you so much for being here. I had a wonderful time learning about what you do and chatting with you and truly getting to know you in a different way. I hope it was a great experience for you. And to our listeners, I want to thank you for joining us with Flavor University's podcast. It's a wonderful honor to be able to share what we do. And I hope this gave you a better look at, like I said, the magic that we are able to create here thanks to the brilliant minds of people like Annalika and Alex, who take care of so many of these details for us. So thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.